brethren and sisters, this exhortation has been prepared by the late Brother J. Croker, and he writes in this way: on this occasion I have gone once again to the words of the Apostle Paul to the Romans. At the beginning of chapter 8, he says, in Weymouth's translation, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, for the Spirit's law, life in Christ Jesus, has set me free from the law of sin and death. Here we have a declaration by Paul as though he was speaking of a triumphant attitude, and he is desirous of relating such to the Christians in Rome, who were a body of people he hardly knew. Paul was always careful and humble in his approach not to spoil another missionary's work. How such a letter appeared to this Roman community may cause ourselves to consider the terminology of what Paul was taking into account. So do these terms of Paul appear ambiguous, leaving our reflections to run in different directions? Rather, to find a reason for what Paul has spoken, it is relevant the words he wrote contain an appropriate meaning. The leading term in this discourse is the word condemnation, and it is used to qualify they who are the object of liberation. This brings us into the question, the class or kind of condemnation to which Paul refers. It would be quite right for any of us not to go beyond the opening meaning of the Greek word from which it originated, for in its simplicity it means judgment. Yet this word condemnation lends itself to a more active content when Paul writes, this term really identifies itself with what he writes in chapter 5. He says, therefore, by the offence of one, judgment came upon all men to condemnation. Now, Paul is not using words to magnify the simplicity of his ideas. He couples his impressions very neatly in Romans chapter 8 verse 2. For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus hath made me free from the law of sin and death. Yet, within such an influential ideal of the character of his master, we find throughout his writings he was aware of his own frailty and the promptings of the flesh. So we find it wise when we read the first verse of Romans chapter 8, never to neglect the words of verse 7. Here Paul describes the battle between the flesh and the spirit of his master. On one occasion, Paul lamented, when I would do good, evil is present within me, the feeling almost of dual personality. It would appear the foremost resolve Paul had in mind was greater of the two wills of attention. The servitude to the one which held no condemnation continually reflects the attitude in following after the spirit of life of Christ. You know, there is room for this freedom of reproof within the thoughts that arise concerning the tokens of remembrance before us. If there is true modesty in what we approach on this occasion, there is the opportunity of being pertinent, which assists us to understand the feeling of those words of Paul. There is therefore now no condemnation. You know, in this declaration of Paul, he does not take any further step to give a personal answer. He affronts the query by using the word now. There is therefore now no condemnation to them which are in Christ. Hence, the sifting through becomes an interest to each of us. We may speak of a rebirth, not only of water, for there is the council of thought, which reveals a spiritual influence of mind across. It is in this area of conscience, and it is in this score of thought, Paul's words find a true repose, response. And it is here, in this range of mediation, it has its limitations. For to dwell, even in such a mindful understanding of the spirit of life of Christ, it becomes the personal experience, not without companionship, of the man who said, "Follow me." There is one viewpoint of Paul's which has reason for this perspective of, there is therefore no condemnation. In chapter 7 and verse 6 of Romans, Paul proclaims the revoking of condemnation which had duress under the law of Moses. The fact of being delivered from the law gave the freedom to serve in the newness of the Spirit of Christ. The terms which Paul declares that we should serve in newness of spirit and not in the oldness of the letter, we may ask, are we at liberty? The joy which Paul proclaims is that by adoption into Israel's affiliation. We do so without involving the rituals. So then, by bearing the thoughtful spirit of the life of Christ, which Paul endorses, it becomes the law of the spirit of life in Christ. It becomes a moral code which becomes a far more searching quest. We only have to consider Jesus' words and the spirit of intelligence contained in his Sermon on the Mount. If then we have been released through the noble sayings of the Sermon on the Mount, we may ask, how then are we to be advantaged? Well, the law of Moses established two statutes, the righteousness of God and the sinfulness of man. Of necessity, within the equity of direction, we have accepted through the counsel of Christ, we find the same two principles. What a challenge it calls Paul to appraise. He identifies the righteousness of God, the lawgiver, and then the blemishes of the reason of mortality. With one exception, it is the biography of God's own Son. It became Paul's own interest as a singular way of life, which is effective for our liberation. Hence he phrases those words, "There is therefore now no condemnation to them which are in Christ Jesus, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit." Though there may be a minor warning within these words, we learn of the high specified opinion of importance through Paul and find the necessity of the aspect of influence which brings us together to remember who is our guideline. Within Paul's influence, we cannot overlook his phrase concerning the Spirit of Christ. To Paul, it had given him a freedom. Yet, to be honest with ourselves, let us not presume upon the term the Spirit of Christ has made us unrestricted. For the design to foster it is predetermined. We are all confined to our own thoughts and activities. The principles still remain. We bear blemishes of they who walk after the flesh. Paul is never elusive of the natural character of man. He illustrates so often how our life is not spontaneous to the indwelling of the spirit of fruition. It is the reason why we meet on this occasion, We are, though we have not reached beyond a probation, yet a blessing can be found, a salvaged quality of the fruits of the Spirit. There is one aspect which Paul endorses, and we find practical duties are recommended. He actually uses the word damnation as a token of remorse. He also speaks to the Corinthians in the first letter, chapter 11. He speaks serious advice to the Corinthians in their approach to be acceptable, and the concluding counsel concerning this ordinance before us, that ye come not together unto condemnation. Very intense words for a thoughtful occasion, which above all should endeavour to convey our mind to our minds the merit of the word remember. It is apparent at Corinth that there was a lapse of ethics. Their ceremony had gone beyond the meaning of tokens prescribed, for it was to be a moral thought of virtue for an event of sacrifice. Such was the design, that we may know the condemnation for sin which became the mortality of life. So as these words of Paul linger with us on this occasion, do we despair of our own unworthiness? Our consideration should be that we have been invited to take into account the merit of a request. Though we carry with us the blemish of humanity, yet there is that glimpse of hope that through faith, those words of Paul concerning condemnation is not continuous. So remember, we are of those who have committed ourselves to God and find great comfort amid the trials of this life. God knows all and understands our way of life. The evil spoken against us and the striving against sin, we do rely on the mercy of God, and thereby walk by faith, and rejoice in his life, which is perfect, and cast out the fear of condemnation.